Clinical psychologist Mary Pfeiffer is perhaps best known for her best-selling books that illuminate who we are and where we're going. Her 1994 classic, Reviving Ophelia, looked at the pressures that adolescent girls face. In 2019, she wrote about women growing into themselves as they age in Women Rowing North. In her latest book, Mary Pfeiffer provides us with further insights, this time through stories of her own life. It's called A Life in Light, and Mary Pfeiffer joins us now to talk about it. Mary, so good to talk to you again.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be with you today.
Well, the book is a themed memoir, a collection of stories about your literal and metaphorical relationship to light. So let's start with the stories of your childhood. Your mom was very bright, but distant. You believe now that she was on the autism spectrum. Your father, who was a World War II veteran, suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder. Talk about how all of that shaped your childhood.
I think the main effect of having the parents I had was I became someone who looked very hard for love. I managed to find love with aunts, grandparents, neighbors. I like relationships. I like being attached. The other part of it is I learned to be very self-reliant because there was really no one taking care of me or my younger brothers.
You write about it being a fairly grim childhood, which might now be identified even as abusive or neglectful. But there were moments of light, and one of those lights was your grandmother. And you write about the fact that she was one of the first people who did the hard work of, quote, loving you into existence.
I think she realized I needed someone who really felt special toward me. So, for example, the first time I noticed that was we showed up at her place. I looked in the cookie jar, and there were ginger snaps. And I said, "This is my favorite cookie." And she said, "I know. That's why I baked it." That was just an amazing thought to me, that someone had actually gone out of their way to anticipate my needs and meet them. Then the other thing that I remember quite well about her was I would always help her do the dishes, and we would talk. And the first time we did the dishes, I said, "Let's do this really slow, Grandma." And we started doing the dishes very, very slowly so she could talk to me. And she'd ask me about what books I was reading. And she'd ask me what good deeds I had done and encouraged me that it was very important to be a good person who was useful and helpful in the world. But mainly she showered me with love and she knew me. She knew I was smart. She knew I was trying. It felt like sunlight at that time in my life, Jane.
The subtitle of the book is Meditations on Impermanence. You write, "Our greatest challenge in this life is coming to grips with impermanence." What do you mean by that?
Well, I wrote this book during the pandemic. And of course, we were all coming to grips with the fact that our lives were different and would probably always be different. But when I wrote Women Rowing North, I was kind of in a sunny patch of my life. I had these five grandchildren around and was healthy myself for the most part. And most of my friends were still healthy. It's only been 4 years, but in that 4 years, I've gone to a lot of funerals. One set of grandchildren have had the nerve to grow up and go off to college. And then the younger set have moved to Canada. So I've had to come to terms with the fact that my own life is changing very rapidly, and that the only way to be happy is to accept the reality I live in. There's no point having an argument with reality. Accepting impermanence, accepting change is the way to be happy. And also with that, Jane, is the idea that at some point in our lives, especially as we get older, we need to be able to find the love we need within ourselves. It just gets harder to find it in the outside world. And so one of the experiences or discoveries I had was being able to generate more love in my own heart and also more joy through transcendent experience.
Mm. Well, the process of extracting moments of light is difficult for a lot of people. And one of the quotes that stood out in your book, you wrote, "I have learned to focus on every good thing that comes my way. I have lowered my expectations about what I can receive from the world and have stopped taking so much for granted. I have learned to surrender."
Mm. I think surrender was the big word during the pandemic. But I've started doing something in the mornings that I find very calming, which is I go out and take a walk around the lake, and I just use that time to breathe deeply and fill my senses with whatever is present. And sometimes it'll be beautiful clover blooming, or a cottonwood shimmering, or frogs croaking. But I'm starting my day priming myself to be grateful and appreciative of the natural world. In my opinion, mindfulness skills and the natural world are the best calming skills in this very difficult time we're all living in.
My favorite chapter in the book is toward the end of the book. It's called Will They Remember? And every sentence is a question. Four pages of the most beautifully crafted questions about the time you spent with your children and your grandchildren. Will they remember rolling walnuts down our hill to see whose was the fastest? Will they recall how I picked fresh raspberries and dropped them into their mouths as if they were goldfish? Will they recall that everything we did was so sacred it became a ritual?
You know, I don't think they actually do remember that, most of what I wrote when I say, will they remember? But they remember I loved them. And so there's a base that's almost on a nonverbal level between me and all of those children that is just pure love, pure gold. And so I'm very grateful for that, Jane.
You've written that the great gift you gave yourself was listening to your own voice, quote, quieting the voices of others and doing what I wanted to do. I think that sounds so appealing to a lot of people, Mary. What's the process of that? How do you do that?
Well, it's very interesting because I mentioned that my grandmother raised me to be a good girl, and so did my mother. She emphasized being a good person, being useful, being obedient, etc. But nobody in my childhood ever suggested that it was important for me to stand up for myself and take care of myself. That was not in the construct system of the women and the people who were teaching me when I was a girl. So that I figured out later. Probably I figured it out when I was teaching psychology and women classes at the university and realized how conditioned I had been to be a traditional woman, always serving, and how rarely I asked the question, what do I want? What do I need in this situation? And so I started incorporating that into my life, setting more boundaries, paying more attention to my own needs. And of course, it's not like we become selfish because we notice our own needs and wants. But it's been very helpful to me to have that focus on how can I be good to the world and how can I be good to myself at the same time.
In the book, you talk about how you've always been drawn to the light. You call it your intoxicant of choice.
Yes.
What do you say to people who only see darkness right now?
First of all, I see a lot of darkness too. Unless you're demented, you're likely to see a lot of darkness right now. The only is the problematic word. Because from my point of view, Jane, we only get one life. And one of our responsibilities, let's say that, is to enjoy it and to savor it. And we're given this really interesting place to live with beauty around us and kind people around us and, you know, magical things happening on a fairly regular basis. And it's really a matter of deciding that we'll seek the light, we'll look for light, we'll look for joy. Most people, for example, when they come into therapy, have what I call problem-saturated stories. Poor me, I'm miserable, I'm a victim of this, I'm depressed. And one of the things I did as a therapist was help people see that they could write a better story about themselves. They could write a narrative that was more light-filled. And one of my hopes for a life in light is it helps readers see there's more possibilities for light in your life than you may realize.
Mary Pfeiffer's memoir is A Life in Light, Meditations on Impermanence. Mary, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to speak with you again.
Thank you, Jane. The same.